Hello and welcome to Life in the Mind, a neurodivergent podcast created by neurodivergent people. I'm Murray Spear.
And I'm Joy Amy Wigman.
And today is Life in the Mind of Nick Misonowich.
Close.
With the whole thing about beforehand and then immediately, as soon as I do it in the actual thing, it's just like, oh, now I'm overthinking it. Hello, Nick.
Hello.
I know Nick from doing years ago. We used to do comedy together.
Yes.
Used to be in Knowing Smirk, doing sketch comedy and improv.
Nice. And I've never met Nick before today.
And after today, you wish you never had.
It's a good tagline. Yes. It's like the subtitle. Yes. So, Nick, what is your relationship with neurodivergence?
Well, I was talking about this with Joy Amy just before we started. So I am officially diagnosed as dyspraxia. I've got the certificate and everything.
Framed
on the wall, yes. So that was an official diagnosis that was made, but I do recognise a lot of traits in myself with ADHD, autism, Asperger's, and so there's always been back of my mind, should I sort of get myself tested out for that? But in the end, I thought, well, dyspraxia, that's enough to deal with for the moment. Yes. Yeah. One can have too many labels. I know there's the talk about stacking, and you've talked about that, but I think I'm sort of happy with the dyspraxia label for the moment.
Yeah, and the other ones you can always kind of look into yourself and see whether they have a place and whether you can just recognise traits and go, oh, cool, I can accept that within myself and maybe give it some, approach it with some tactics or something.
Yeah, precisely.
Rather than doing a whole blimmin assessment or something.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
A long old assessment.
Yeah.
And they go, hey, this person's got difficulty with focus. Let's give them 14-page document to fill out.
Yeah, before you can actually even get the assessment.
Yeah, before you can get on the wait list. Oh, wait, thanks.
I haven't even managed to submit that. They should have that, like, the half-life after they give you, especially for the ADHD one, it was like, we gave you the self-assessment form 6 months ago. We haven't heard anything back. We're just going to give you the diagnosis.
Yes.
Fast track.
Yeah, we have a friend who like twice has tried to start the whole thing for diagnosis for ADHD and just not sent the form back in. Definitely. Yes. If you've done it twice, you definitely just need to go on the list.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah. All these things are barriers to the very thing that they... when did you first realise that you were dyspraxic?
It was when I was about 30, I think, and I hadn't really heard of it beforehand. And I think it was just a booklet in a doctor's waiting room about dyspraxia. And I started reading it and I thought, ooh, all these things, they do seem like me a lot. But but definitely, going back over my childhood, it was a very, very clumsy childhood. It took me ages to learn how to tie my shoelaces. Took me ages, couldn't write legibly, never learned to ride a bike, never learned to drive a car, rubbish at sports whatsoever. But the thing was, because it was, there was always the thing that it wasn't understood, so things like bad handwriting was always seen as more of a sort of moral failing.
Handwriting's bad, he's a terrible human being.
You can get away with that for time for school and in primary school, because I was quite intelligent and I read a lot, and I sort of was able to get away with the sort of persona of the mad professor, which sort of, it does
describe you quite well.
It does. It sort of suited me well till about 11 when I went to secondary school, and it was a grammar school. So I remember seeing Victoria Wood saying something similar, that she was the top of her class for everything until she went to a grammar school when everyone was intelligent and even the bullies were intelligent. Yes. You know,
and they're bullying you in a different way.
They're bullying. Yes.
Like, I liked my thumb juicer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So something really intellectual.
And yeah, I remember the sort of first couple of weeks of secondary school, and there was things like, you know, the science I was looking forward to, but it turned out to be taught by this really sort of stern faced woman who sort of, she barked out an instruction on the first day and left, and I couldn't quite grasp what it was because the dyspraxia, you can't follow instructions properly. Yeah. I was sitting there like, what did she say? And everyone was, am I the only one who didn't understand what she actually told us to do? And then we did history, and that was all drawing maps, and I can't draw. I was really disillusioned with school, and I think it put me off so many different subjects.
And that sudden, from going to the top of your class, finding everything kind of easy, or just being able to do everything, to suddenly just being like, I can't do a load of these things, or I'm struggling. Yeah. Such a change.
It is. And it's also the organisation as well, that if you have to go from classroom to classroom with different teachers, with different books, and getting your homework in on time.
Change as well.
Yes.
It's constantly like shifting the paradigm.
Yeah.
This person allows you to not sit still. This person doesn't. This person allows you to doodle. This one doesn't. This person is okay if you're not staring at them all the time in rapt adoration of their amazing teacherly wiles. Yes. This person likes that.
Yes.
Needs that.
Yeah. So secondary school, I did struggle a lot, and I think that university was fine, but I sort of left without an idea of what is it I'm supposed to be doing? What is it I'm looking for? What is it that I can actually do as a day job? And I did a lot of sort of temping jobs, but it was always like the following instructions bit and following a set routine. I just couldn't quite grasp. So I'd sort of end up making lots of mistakes, and I'd have managers sort of tearing their hair out. But Nick, you're obviously an intelligent person. You haven't got this document 100% correct. It's only 99% correct. But like, imagine if doctors made 1% of errors every 100. And that's a bit of a different. Like, yeah.
The handwriting makes it. Likely it is.
Yes,
that's a trope.
I'm starting to see why improv was definitely a good route for you, Nick.
Yes.
Because like there's a set of rules, but it's not like instructions that you have to go by. You make up your own instructions.
Like guidelines.
Precisely. Yes.
So in that, how did the discovery of dyspraxia, did that then change how you related to stuff like work, your life and yourself?
It did a lot. I think it sort of, for the first time, I sort of thought, I'm not a failure as a human. I'm not failing as a human being.
Yeah.
I just can't do a certain amount of things that other people can because of the way I am. I can try and get over that. I can try and find ways around that, but I'm not failing to do things. I'm not an idiot. Like you wouldn't say to Stephen Hawking, come on, I can run around the block. Why can't you get out of the chair, idiot? It is that. It's suddenly realising, well, this is what I am. You know, it's not me failing to do things because I can't be bothered. It's because that's the way my mind works. The way that my body works, and the fact that my mind and body sometimes have quite different ideas of what we should be working towards.
The body wants to go, my brain wants to go this way, but my hand is still holding this thing over here. And there's something here that makes me fall over.
I'm starting to think of Humphrey from Ghosts. Humphrey's the one who leaves his head in different places and his head and his body want to do different things.
I think that's quite good. My mind and body are like a sort of old bickering couple that they don't always... No, they're together. They'll stay together, but they don't always agree on everything.
No, over time they just find kind of little things that they just get used to. It's okay, you just don't know what left is. Yeah. I know what right is and you know what left is. So sometimes I'll say right and you'll go left and brain and body will split. Yeah, I don't have that one, but I know loads of people, but that's like that seems to be a really common thing. Yeah. Left and right.
Yeah.
Directional.
I have to think for right. I do have to sort of actually think this way's right. I have to sort of imagine holding a pen in my hand and then then I know.
Actually, it's weird because I still think about, like, it's really small now. I've got a tiny little birthmark, very faint on my elbow, and when I was a kid, like, it was the same size and darker. So I just think I have still have
which,
to think
which side is
which side's my birthmark
exactly
on. That's the right.
With one on my hand, and like a little mole just there, and it's now just covered under years of worn down skin. But I do exactly the same thing, and I think I still do. Like, which senses, like, that, or which pen?
The left or the right? And you'll see my arm go up. Like, oh, it's that one.
It's a little flap to just push you off in the obstruction. When you found out about it, your dyspraxia, was there a sort of coming out situation of you kind of going, everybody, I'm like this because my brain is wired differently?
Yes.
Did you choose to tell people individually, or was it more of a, hello world, my coordination's very iffy sometimes, but I can also think real good in certain ways?
It was definitely the latter. I definitely made it via the good old village medium of Facebook. Partly there was a lot of apologies to old flatmates of mine from uni for sort of either wrecking them or, wrecking their flats or just leaving things in a absolutely disgusting state, because I'd sort of walked away and my brain had come up with something else to do and I hadn't realised I'd left washing up or anything like that, which sort of maybe starting to think more ADHD or I don't know. You're smiling.
No, it's just really, it's really interesting because we've to let listeners into a bit of the backs behind the scenes stuff, we recorded an interview with Paul Avery before this, and Paul was talking about that being the walking away and thinking, I've definitely done that. We're just kind of forgetting about it. It's a massive part of his ADHD. And I'm just sitting here going, someone just sat in the same chair as you about 2 hours ago.
same thing.
Yes.
No, that is interesting.
But yes, it was definitely, I sort of felt I had to come out. I did feel I'd sort of wrecked a lot of relationships just by it. I mean, first Mrs. Mazonovic, I think in the first week of living together, I wrecked most of the house through various... I don't know if that's why the marriage failed in the end, but,
It is interesting to think back once you know certain things, and giving the validity to yourself and also just how that changes. How you relate to yourself and look back at how that's affected various different things over the years.
I know that getting my sort of discovery definitely made me go, that's why that didn't work, that's why I did that. I felt a certain amount of like relief after I did that Facebook thing, because I did that not long ago. Did you feel like a sense of relief, like, or was it just like, oh, it's out there now, I don't have to worry about it anymore?
It's absolutely relief. Yes, and it's something I'm very open about now. Last year, I got promoted, which was good. I'm now sort of team leader, and I did email my team before to say, look, by the way, I'm dyspraxic. I apologise if you tell me something and I don't get around to doing it, or I come or I misspell an email to you, or or anything like that. But that's the explanation. Please do feel free to open up with any sort of conditions you have.
Yeah, that's good. It's really good that you can actually, in doing that, creates, you can engender a environment of being open. And being like, okay, cool, so I'm opening up with what I've got and what I'm bringing to the table and how that might exhibit itself. Please feel free to do that. And in the doing so, you're actually really creating that, helping to create that space.
Yeah.
That's really,
Wouldn't it be nice if more places did that?
Yeah. People just went, hey, it's a thing that we can do, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's sort of like the attitude that I take now. Well, I always did with the fibromyalgia, because I've known about that for a very long time, of going, hey, I've got fibromyalgia. This is stuff that happens to me.
Yes.
Don't worry about it when it happens. If you've got stuff, you can tell me the stuff and I'll just be like, okay. And now with the autism thing, I kind of do the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's surprising how many people go, oh, we can talk about that. Okay, yeah, so I've got ADHD.
It's interesting how much we shut away.
Yeah.
We just go, oh, I'm just going to err on the side of not telling anyone because it might be contagious in some way. Because when I tell someone, they'll go, oh, you're throwing it on me. I have to take it on. It's like, no, you don't. Yes. Actually, that's a you problem. Don't take that on yourself. Or just like notice that you are and then be like, okay, cool. Why am I taking that on? Or, well, there's, And also that idea that, mental health is contagious. This person is crying next to me. They will make me feel sad. Go away with you.
So one of the questions we ask everybody, which might be even more interesting for you, Nick, is how does your neurodivergence affect your physicality?
Physicality? I have no physicality.
I would say you have lots of physicality.
Well, I move a lot. I do tend to fidget a lot. I move around a lot. But doing sort of physically anything is really difficult to the point of impossible. I can't draw. I have no artistic talent in that direction. I look at people who actually sort of make things. Like, I've seen you do all your sort of their wool dolls and everything. How the hell do you actually do that? Or
is it kind of when you're doing it, find it difficult to actually work out the steps? Or is it like the actual making your hands not get tangled up in it?
I think it's both of them. It's working out what the steps are to get there and then working out the actually coordinating myself to do it. So yeah, Christmas is absolute nightmare for me, doing the Christmas wrapping.
Oh, you don't make your wife do all of it.
No. I do it. Then it's an apologies to say, my children are old enough, I can say, Daddy wrap this. But I think Father Christmas might have been a bit bit unwell when he wrapped your presents.
Everything's fine.
No, everything's fine. But
I'd say that the thing about your physicality, being somebody that knows you, is that, like, you have such presence on stage, whether you're doing kind of stand-up or acting, and it's such an individual thing, and it has a uniqueness that, like, is really unforgettable. So when you're doing your stand-up or your sketch comedy or in plays, like, people always remember you.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, you're very funny. I mean, that's always a good start. But I think, I think that you can take that from that. That's a real positive.
It enhances your personality.
It's part of your physicality. Is very much part of you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so that's very nice to hear. I mean, I've done like stand-up when people come up and say, I think you're sort of quite naturally likeable as well. And it's never thought about that, but
I'm going to be standing 2 feet apart with one hand on the microphone and one hand in my pocket, like a stand-up stands. And I think that's very forced into to be able to see somebody being naturally themselves.
The microphone is the wall between them and the audience, type of thing. I really like that element of it being enhancing something, especially with the stand-up element, where your physicality being different to the norm because of your dyspraxia enhances it, and it's actually a big positive. And actually, that uniqueness is a really good thing, because I'm also dyspraxic, and that's the one that I still find it hard to look at it in any way as a positive. I find it within myself a weirdness. It's I do things wrong. I can't do the things I want to do at a certain time. Like, it just gets in the way of stuff, and it's kind of made me bad at things I want to do. But it's really nice to hear it from that way and go, oh, actually, it adds a uniqueness to your movement and stuff that actually can be a positive thing. Yeah,
the big downside is doing musicals. Oh, I've done musicals and dancing.
We've tried to do choreography in Knowing Smirk.
I'm out. Oh god, yeah. So, you know, it's like when you, okay, choreographer comes up, right, step to the side, right, step to the other side, okay, now let's take one, hang on, which side am I stepping to again? Can we go back to that bit? I've forgotten which side. Joy, me will remember this. I did a play 3 years ago. I had to have a sword fight with someone, and that was heavily choreographed. Yeah. And the poor bloke I was fighting, Grant, he was petrified. He did not know where I was going to go. And the worst thing was, I think I was supposed to lose a fight, but it was
Grant backing away.
Yes.
At least you only had an umbrella, right?
Yes, yeah, I think it was only an umbrella, yes. But I could have still poked his eye out, and I think nearly did on some nights.
That's interesting, because, yeah, I've definitely worked on the dyspraxia stuff over the years, and I worked out that, for that kind of thing, the less I think about it, and, like, trust my body to know what to do after I've practiced it and got it into my muscle memory enough times with someone walking through it and me mimicking them.
Yes, yeah.
Then, if I don't think about it, I can do it. But if I overthink, as soon as I overthink it, then I'm going to, like, trip over myself or something, or, like, go in the wrong direction, or go, like, yeah, which is really interesting. I don't know. There's all these ways we work out our own way around.
Yeah, that's interesting, yes.
Yeah. How do you, through the kind of lens of your neurodivergent experience of the world, how do you say that your perception of the world maybe is different? Or just how do you, in yourself, experience the world?
I think I was thinking about this question, and it does go back, thinking of a sort of theatrical metaphor. Is, you know, first time you ever do a play in the first rehearsal, and you've got the script, so you think you know the sort of words you say, and you've got a fair idea of where you want to move, but you sort of move somewhere and there's someone else there, and they bump, and the director sort of has to say, okay, that's not going to work, we'll sort that out. You can't do this move because you're holding a prop and you're moving this prop, so maybe we'll change that or change the prop.
Mm.
But I always feel like life for me is the first rehearsal, that I am moving from one place to another. No one has sorted out the moves. So no one has sorted out where the props should go. I think I know where they should go. I think I know the lines I should say, but I haven't had a chance to work it, but I'm only getting one go at it.
Life is eternal blocking phase. Yes, we never get to the performance.
Yes, it's like you're asking me to perform on just a first rehearsal basis.
Yeah.
The other thing I was thinking of is like the sort of theatrical or film metaphor is they have their sort of intimacy coaches and go through love scenes, but I could do with just an intimacy coach for just talking to people generally first time, and just saying
that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yes it's just okay, you're talking to this person. They're going to be talking to you. These are the things it's all right to say. Because I'm always scared about saying. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, go back to what you were saying about it. When someone says they're ADHD and you say, they can open up about that.
Yeah, I could just relax.
Yeah.
Yes.
My problem is the oversharing.
Yeah.
Which at least now I know why I do it. Yeah. And like, I just open my mouth and all of this stuff that like, would make people go, whoa, okay. I was just telling you my name is Lucy and asking you how you were. Like, oh yeah, when people say how are you, they don't mean how are you, they mean hello.
Yes.
And then the opposite of going so far on the undersharing that they have no idea who you are.
Yeah.
You just had a conversation, they're like, who was that person? I don't know what their name is. I know these like random a few things about them, but they were basically just listening the whole time. That's what I get. I was like, listening, haven't they said who I am? And they're like, cool. That was a good introduction.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us, Nick, because it's been really nice to talk to somebody else with dyspraxia, because we've got Murray, but you're our first dyspraxic guest.
Genuinely for me as well, as I said, it's really good to, I think, other dyspraxic people are some of the, actually talking about it in itself.
Yeah.
The least I've talked about out multiple different ones.
Actually, the really thing I was gonna bring up is because you're a Doctor Who guy.
Oh yes.
And Doctor Who, although it was in the Jodie Whittaker phase, had a dyspraxic assistant. And the representation is not the best representation, but I know I had one of my uni friends was absolutely cock-a-hoop. She was like, I have never ever seen somebody who has the same thing as me on television. Although he was able to run down that corridor when there was a Dalek off.
Yes, exactly.
But you know,
for me that works because my dyspraxia, when it's go time, it's a stressful situation, it all slots into place and I can move like an animal. Rather than a human. I never go to the human point. I'm just like dyspraxic or animal. The human point just gets skipped.
And I have seen Nick sing under duress.
Sing.
Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us, Nick. Guys, tell us about your experiences with dyspraxia. Comment on any of our posts or on the YouTube channel. Come and join us next week.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, that's it for this episode. You can follow us on Instagram at life.inthemind, and our other socials are linked in our bio. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and comment. Bye-bye.